Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Out of the corner, finds a man, far circle shot, scores, and there is the big man, showing us that this game has indeed been a lovely fit for him.
Good start to the Prospects Challenge for Radim Mertke and the Sabres. Unfortunately, no wins along the way over the course of three games in 4 days as we now get set for the main training camp, which begins on Wednesday right here at KeyBank Center. Almost 80 degrees outside, definitely not that inside. Scarves are no longer optional for me. They might be a permanent fixture on Sabres Live with Marty. I'm Brian. We're going to talk a lot about goaltending across the NHL today.
Yes.
But we must talk a little bit about what transpired this weekend for the Sabres, and more importantly, what it may mean for some individuals going into main camp as they report tomorrow.
So it was interesting, Duffer, because yesterday I was not at the Prospect Challenge game. I was out at Country Club of Buffalo with the Sabres Foundation golf tournament. But that was the talking point, right? After Friday and Saturday games, Sunday the Sabres had no games, and then they were playing on Monday. So, you know, I stopped to chat with Eric Staal and stopped to chat with Kevin Adams and others and Seth Appert and Lindy Ruff and, you know, kind of talking about the Prospect Challenge and who stood out. And look, it's easy to pile on and say, oh, well, you know, Isaac Rosean and Noah Ostlund and Konstantelainis. And we talked about them for days, maybe even weeks leading up to the Prospect Challenge. But for me, it's more about the positive. Okay, who stood out? And I think that the USHL line of Kaharchik, Rosinski, and Novotny stood out. Mertke stood out. I thought the defense, Laberge stood out, and Novikov and Sevi Komarov. So there were some guys that stood out, but it wasn't the guys that people wanted to see standing out and dominating and then going into camp with the vibes feeling good, right? But that's okay. It's like a reset now. Camp is going to start. It's a reset. If you're Rosean and Konstantelainis and Ostlund, you're like, okay, it wasn't great during Prospect Challenge, but that's just one thing. Like, can you just make a bigger step forward? I think that was what the talk was even before the third game was played yesterday.
Lanius had very noticeably strong second period yesterday. Mm-hmm. Ostlund's Ostlund. Like, I think his energy and smarts, even if unproductive on the overall score sheet, like the three games combined, I don't think there's much to quibble over with his game. I think I don't know whether Rosean would be disappointed. I would think that Anton Wahlberg might have been frustrated
yep.
by his lack of production based on the opportunities that he had. And again, when you speak of opportunity, it's the fact that the coach literally lined up the returning Amerks to load up on mm-hmm. a top line, whether it was Wahlberg, Ostlund, Rosean, or at times Wahlberg, Hellenius, Rosean, Wahlberg, Hellenius, Ostlund. Like, the crazy part, which is completely irrelevant because it was just a Prospects Challenge featuring three exhibition games that did not result in anybody hoisting a trophy. It's just exhibition games, right? But the hardest part to believe was that Buffalo was getting the majority of the power plays.
Yeah.
They basically couldn't buy a power play goal. And every time there was the other team getting the opportunity, boom, instantly in the back of the net. It was the deciding factor in all three games, in tie games, where it went sideways when the penalty kill allowed a goal. And it was just again, it is what it is. It's three games that are now parked forever, likely never to be brought up again. And we have camp starting tomorrow.
Could be brought up again and in a positive way. Like if for all of a sudden you have Consolanius in main camp, like really turning it up, like not just one level, but three or four levels. And you're mm-hmm. like, well, he got the message. Like he kind of regrouped himself between the Monday game. And I know today they were on the ice. Tomorrow they're off the ice. They're doing medicals. And then Thursday is the first team practices. But there's a couple of days for those guys to be able to say, hey, I'm gonna reset here. And so it could be talked about in that sense. I don't think that you're going to go about saying, oh, I remember in 25, like Summer Prospect Challenge where Roseanne. No, it's not going to be about that. Now, we can talk about Radim Mirka. And his, and because the power play, as you mentioned, wasn't doing much and there was no production, he got put on the second power play, on the first power play unit the second game. So I think that there's some positive there. So we can talk about that. But when it comes to the other guys, you move on. Is it disappointing? A little bit. But is it understandable? Okay. It's three games and it's three right. games in 4 days that, maybe you didn't get as much prep time for it that you would have liked.
Right. But I would never say that because all five teams had the same prep time and Buffalo yeah. was the only one not to get a win. So that's why I would never go down that path. Anyway, let's park that and get on to stuff that's more interesting.
It wasn't a hometown discount. It was a hometown distraction.
Boston
that's what
had
it
the
was.
Right idea. They only played twice. Everybody yeah. else played three times. But anyway, the position of goaltending has, I don't know if it's been the hottest topic for the Sabres this offseason, because to me it feels like the defense corps was the biggest talking point. Would Byram stay? Yes. Would he sign multiple years? Would he go to arbitration? All that. It's settled. Byram's back. They added to the blue line in Kesselring. Mm-hmm. But I think now that we start camp tomorrow, I think the focus is back on goaltending. Because of what yeah. transpired within the past week, a report that Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has a tweak with uncertainty as far as how severe. These are the reports. The signing of Alexander Georgiev, the fact that more signings happen around the league, and yeah. the understanding that there, as much as most of the dominoes have fallen in the goaltender position, I don't think you could sit here and say that a lot of teams are super happy with their goaltending going into the season. So that in itself, after Buffalo takes one of those players off the market in Georgiev, and with Carter Hart trying to work his way back into the NHL,
yeah,
I think there's a lot to talk about here, and it can start right here in Buffalo with anything you've picked up as per this topic, because right now we have Luukkonen, Lyon, Levi, Georgiev, with camp opening tomorrow.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Because I had to do a rankings of basically tandems for TSN last week. Go mm-hmm. all the way from 32nd all the way to one backup. But really, does it matter? How much do you put in the backup position? And so what the Sabres are doing now, because of the tweak to Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and then we'll know on Thursday.
Tomorrow we're going to know, because the coach and general manager are addressing the media.
Yes, but and we'll see on Thursday or by the weekend or by next week or whatnot, if Luukkonen is on the ice and how does he look and where does that go? But Georgiev is signed. Like, this is not a PTO. This is not a let's bring him in and then we'll see. It's no, there's a contract there. And I think this is maybe a way to also protect yourself, that if there was more tweaks or, goalies being banged up in preseason and or the first few weeks of the season, knowing that you have the numbers and that you have the depth and the bodies to be able to fill that in. I think a lot of that is okay, because Devin Levi is probably going to need another year of really solid experience in Rochester. But that could all change in training camp, and we don't know. But when you look around the National Hockey League, you're right. Like, there is a lot of teams that have three goalies signed and three goalies that could be in the National Hockey League, just because that's kind of the trend that we're seeing now. I talk about a team carrying three goalies. I hate it. But now we're seeing more and more that veteran guy that can be maybe clearing waivers and be put in the AHL for a short period of time, just because you have some question marks in the crease moving forward.
Let's keep it on Buffalo for a minute.
Yeah.
In your mind, what is the likelier scenario? Devon Levi earns the spot on this team to start, or Alexander Georgiev earns a spot to start, based on obviously a number of other situations that we don't have answers to yet?
Are we talking everybody healthy?
Well, no.
Okay, that's
that was kind of with an assumption, like, what if?
What if Luukkonen is not ready to start this season?
Even if not, like, the whole point of camp is competition, is it not?
100%. Lyon is in there saying, hey, hold right. my beer here. Like,
of course.
I got an opportunity too, and I was pretty good in the NHL last year, and I was pretty good the year before and pretty good the year before.
Right. So what do you think? If you simplify it between Georgiev and Levi, like, what is your hunch as to how the performances play out here in the preseason?
My hunch would be it's more likely that Georgiev would be putting himself in a position to earn that spot, to say, I'm opening night Thursday, 7 p.m. against the Rangers, opening night, I'm the starter, if there is something to be lingering with Luukkonen. And I'm not saying that it's a knock on Devon Levi. I still think that, number one, Georgiev last season at this time of the year was the number one goaltender for a cup-contending team, the Colorado Avalanche. The first month of the season really didn't go well, and then he gets traded to San Jose, and while you're in San Jose all year, and this is going to be a tough assignment as a goaltender. But I think that there is something for him to say, hey, I am wanting to reestablish myself as that NHL goaltender that can be leading the league in wins, which he did with Colorado just 2 or 3 years ago. So it was like, he's
Marty,
there.
Prior to last year, Georgiev had the most wins in the NHL over the previous two seasons.
Exactly. Yeah. And then some people are going to say, he played for Colorado. Yeah, you know what? He lost his job
Omar
in Colorado
played for Boston.
Last year.
We don't hold that against him.
Exactly, like. But he did lose his job in Colorado last year. Same team, but it was like,
well,
that's not good
did.
Enough. Exactly, with Justus Annunen. But so I say, when I look at the plan, right, I'm thinking Georgiev, to me, would be a really good wild card, saying the reestablishing of himself, the experience that he has, the fact that he's been a number one that has played 60 plus games in a year. Like, there is definitely that, a little older. So there's more of a likeliness of him along with Lyon, let's say, to start the season. And then let's see what happens. Then having Levi come in and say, no, Devon, you're our guy. I still look at Devon as a really top end prospect that will have an impact on this organization for years to come. But there's parts of his game that needs to be worked on. And for me, you know, there's a fancy word. People talk about growth mindset, right? How you got to fail to learn from failing and recover and all of that. I think this is all good. This is all great. Growth mindset, development plans, all of it. But at the NHL level right now, it has to be result-based. It has to be, can you win games or not? It's not about, hey, let's bring a guy at the NHL level to see if we can continue his development. No, when you get here to the NHL level, especially with the situation in Buffalo, you have to be like ready for it. Not we're going to continue to develop you. And I think that's why Georgiev, there's no more development with Georgiev. He is what he is. He can be really good and lead the league and wins over a two-season span, or lose his job, get traded to San Jose, and then have to wait until September to sign a contract. Like, he is what he is, but there's no development there. That's not like, but I think Devon still has development to be done in Rochester.
Another way potentially to look at this, if Luukkonen turns out to be fine, how would you envision the usage of all four of those netminders over the course of six preseason games, of which a 4-in-6-day stretch begins on Monday in Columbus.
It'd be very easy. Like, I look at the schedule, it'd be everybody would get a half in the first two, and everybody would get, like, it would be the first three would be like, maybe, let's see, Luukkonen is your number one guy, and he's healthy. So you split Luukkonen with Levi Georgiev with Lyon the next day, you know, at home against Columbus or vice versa. Then you have Luukkonen in Detroit. You have maybe Lyon at home against Detroit. You have whoever you think. Is Georgiev more likely to be in Buffalo or Levi on that October 1st? Then on the 3rd, you play Luukkonen again. So I think it's very easy. Unfortunately, somebody is not going to get a full game. Or maybe you have a conversation with everybody and you say, hey, the first four games, everybody gets a full game. So you go Luukkonen a full game, Levi a full game, Lyon a full game, Georgiev a full game, and that leaves you with two games, the two Pittsburgh game to kind of any your two guys that are going to stay on the roster get an extra game. So it's very easy, very simple. It lays out perfectly. But it would be an internal conversation as what do you like better? If I remember being a goalie in the league, if they come to me and say, what would you like better? I would say, I want a half game to start. I just want to get in for 30 minutes, get the kinks out. I love that first half game. And I know people are like, some goalies don't like that. I didn't even mind coming in halfway in the game. Like I did that with the Rangers. Lundqvist played the first half game. I played the second half of the first game. It was fine. I come in, I got 10 minutes left in the second, and then I got one period. And then you kind of get that out of the way. You've got your first taste. You could give up four goals. You could give up no goals. It does not matter. It's a half game just to get going, and then you have a full game later. I used to love it, but you sit as a group, and you're like, do you guys like half games? Or maybe you already have known that from previous experiences. Somebody says, I hate half games, whatever. But then you go to full games if they don't want to. But I used to love half games. It was like kind of, it felt like you were just doing half the work. It was awesome.
The truth comes out all these years later. Half miler, Marty Baron.
Yes.
it's so hard to continue pushing this line of questioning based on the great unknown here, which is just like, how serious are we talking with Luukkonen? But the other thing that intrigues me now that there's four guys that could make, you know, legitimate NHL money. Mm-hmm. And what we kind of discussed right off the top of this particular topic, and that is other teams potentially still being willing to acquire somebody.
Well, like Columbus did, right?
Could any of these four be of value elsewhere before the season begins? And does any of that, like, I'm assuming a general manager has to think of all this stuff, but they also may have like a little more inside knowledge than anybody else. Like, you know,
if Luukkonen is not right, like, hey, if he's going to be a little bit delayed, but yes.
Hey, why don't you bring in Georgiev? Give him a run, let us know, and then we'll talk. You know what I mean? This is all hypothetical stuff, but I'm just like, everybody that comes to camp everywhere has potential value, right?
Well, that was me when I signed with the Islanders, Duffer. I signed with the Islanders late in the summer, and basically the conversation was DiPietro. Nobody knows that, but Rick DiPietro is going to start the season injured. And whenever he comes back, if it is late October, early November, December, then you'll have a chance to have played, and we'll continue to talk to other teams. Other teams know that we signed you with the understanding that you may be available at some point this year. And that was just, to, you know, same thing you're explaining here is that, you know, the Sabres understand and know maybe a little bit more what's happening with Luukkonen, with the tweak. And we'll find out a lot more about that tomorrow. As you mentioned, Kevin Adams and Lindy Ruff will talk to the media. But there is that conversation always ongoing with other general managers. Look, the Flyers had four goaltenders. They had Samuelsson, Dan Vladar, Fedotov, and Kolosov. They had four goaltenders. They just traded one to Columbus. But Columbus already had their two goalies in Jed Greaves and Elvis Merzlikins. So now they acquire Fedotov. But who knows? Maybe Columbus is like, we needed a third guy. Or maybe Columbus is saying, look, let's see who wins, because we've had conversation about Merzlikins being maybe on the trade block. So we're going to keep our options that way. There's conversations happening all the time. And Kevin Adams, I would think, would have had these conversations with everybody, knowing we're bringing in Georgiev. But who knows? Maybe Lyon will be the number one guy and Georgiev will be in waiting. We don't know what's going to happen, but you have to have those conversations.
What are you thinking on the Columbus front with Fedotov and what it means for Merzlikins, Jet Greaves, and Fedotov himself?
Well, I mean, producer Jeff puts it in the chat, and this is awesome. Don Waddell, when he traded for Fedotov, he said, I don't have nightmares too often, but every nightmare I had this summer was about goaltending. So I thought we should probably address it. Why? Because Jed Greaves did great at the end of the year last year with Columbus, right? Almost got him into a playoff spot. They were in a playoff spot.
8 days in April. That's the documentary, remember?
That's a documentary. 8 days in April. But you have Elvis Merzlikins, who, man, 5 years ago was thought of he's going to be the next big guy, and it hasn't panned out, and there's been a lot happening on the personal side, you know, losing his really good friend, goalie partner over there. And so there has been a lot happening, but they didn't have really a backup plan, because their backup plan was Daniil Tarasov, who moved on to Florida, and now they only had two. Teams don't like going into the season with only two as their options. They want a third wheel. They want a third guy that they can have on the roster, maybe at the start of the year, they can have in the minors. So they traded for Fedotov. I think that when I look at, man, I'm getting a phone call at the same time. That's what's happening. I got to put my thing on do not disturb. When I think of Fedotov and the Flyers, I think it was an experimentation that didn't work out. It just didn't work out. I don't think he was good. I don't think he was thought of to be this great Russian that was going to come over and be so big and take the league by storm. Didn't work out. Will it work out in Columbus? I don't think so. I think Don Waddell took a shot. Like, really? Like, I think the Sabres could have probably called Philly and said, hey, we'll give you a sixth-round pick for Fedotov. But I think the Sabres did wisely to go away from that and go in the Georgiev route, because I think Georgiev is way better than Fedotov. It's not even a question there. So Columbus finds himself a third goalie, but I don't know. I think Waddell is going to have more nightmares, because that doesn't fix their depth right now.
Well, the interesting aspect of the Columbus acquisition in reading their locals, it wasn't 100% certain, but whether Philadelphia had paid the bonus, but Fedotov's deal at just over $3 million a season comes with a $2.5 million bonus annually. So if that was paid already, Columbus is only on the hook for just over $700,000 for this final season of Fedotov's deal, which makes it real easy to give him a chance, have him play in Cleveland, if, you know, assuming he clears waivers. And again, the reports were that he is not interested in giving up on his NHL dream. So that's why they made the move, in the belief that if he doesn't crack the lineup right from day one, that they can work with him in Cleveland. So I don't know.
It's great. It's really great for him. Doesn't win, give up the dream. That's awesome. Keep pushing. And maybe you got to go back to the American League. Look, yesterday at the Sabres Foundation golf tournament, Dwayne Roloson was there. I remember when Rolly and I were here in Buffalo. Rolly was an established backup goaltender in the NHL. And then Hasek gets hurt. I get up. I get the job. I play more games. The next year, Rolly had to go back to the AHL. He went to, it was St. Louis's farm team, Worcester, I think, at the time. He went to Worcester, played there, and then all of a sudden he's in Minnesota on a new expansion team. And his career jumps right back up. But he went back to the AHL to reestablish himself as a good Ron Tugnut did that. He was Quebec, and then he went to Portland. They played in 95, 96 against Rochester in the Calder Cup final. And then, boom, Columbus, starts, and Ron Tugnut is their goalie. Like, there's many goalies that have done that with reinventing themselves, re-establishing themselves at the AHL level. And maybe that's the same thing with Georgiev. I don't think, like, if you start Luukkonen and Lyon in Buffalo, and all of a sudden Georgiev goes on waivers, clears waivers, he goes to Rochester with Levi. I don't think Georgiev is the number one guy in Rochester. I think you're wanting Levi to get 50 to 55, maybe games, 60 games in Rochester. Mm-hmm. But who knows? If Levi doesn't perform, you're Michael Leone, and you're like, listen, we have guys here that have to experience winning, that have to compete, and we need somebody. Maybe Georgiev gets that chance. Who knows what could happen? But yeah, for Fedotov, I think that could be the – he's 28 years old, though. Like, I mean, it's getting late early on the West Coast, as Yogi Berra always said.
Yeah, it doesn't – like, it's completely different situation in Cleveland based on them not having a Levi.
Yes.
You know, like, that's what Jet Greaves was, and that's why he's being given the opportunity to, you know, come in as, you know, kind of the front runner for the number two spot behind Merzlikins, and maybe it ends up becoming co-number one based on, you know, the potential for Jet. I don't see a situation where it's Levi and Georgiev. I down there in Rochester. I think if Georgiev proves well enough here, he's either needed here, which is why they signed him, or I think he'll have interest from somebody else, injury or otherwise, and around the NHL.
It was interesting, like,
a hunch before training camp begins. That's my hunch.
But I agree with you, because so Elliot Friedman on his 32 Thoughts podcast talked about, you know, like usually when a goalie signs late, you know, like this, it's league minimum. It's just like, or it's a PTO. But Elliot kind of suggested that maybe Georgiev had other teams that were interested, because the Sabres gave him more than league minimum. They went and gave him a little bit more money, almost to say, hey, here, we'll give you an extra $50,000, an extra $100,000, and we want you here, because maybe there was more of a need in Buffalo. So maybe it goes hand in hand with what you're saying, that either Georgiev is in Buffalo at the start of the season because there's that need, or he maybe plays a half a game or a full game in preseason, looks decent, well enough, and then is put on waivers, and there's a team that has a need that picks him up on waivers at the end of training camp. Like, I think that almost makes more sense. And then, I mean, this is something that we'll talk about probably more in October and whatever. And then there's the Carter Hart situation, right? Like, October 15th, he may be able to sign. November 15th, he can start practicing with a team. And December 1st, those players that were on trial with Team Canada can rejoin and play games on December 1st. So, but Carter Hart hasn't played in 2 years. So that's another wrinkle in the National Hockey League. If somebody's looking, like Edmonton or whatnot, apparently Utah is interested. That's what Darren Dreger reported. So Insider, like, there may be some noise with, you know, when we get to October and November when it comes to that.
Was it Dreger or Chris Johnston?
It was both of them.
Are you sure?
And I read an article that says, according to Darren Dreger and Chris Johnston,
okay,
you know, the Utah Mammoth would be very interested in Carter
Hart. Don't want to upset the insiders before the season even begins.
I don't know which one had it first. We got to go back and look at the timestamp on the social media post.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
It's been well established. It's been repeated many, many times, countless times. Do not ask Paul if the Sabres are going to win tonight. Paul, are the Bisons going to win tonight, though?
They're up. They're in tough against the Yankees farm team here. They basically have a major league bullpen, and they're in first place. So the Bisons are 2-11 against Scranton Wilkes-Barre, but sure, you never know. Santander is in left field today. He's been DHing in his rehab assignment here with the Buffalo Bisons, but he's getting his first opportunity to start in left field as I see him jog out there right now.
Blue Jays and Yankees affiliates. Blue Jays are lucky this year, sorry to say, that the AAA results will not be factored into the Major League results, as the Bisons have had a tough year. But the Blue Jays, Yankees, Red Sox playoff future is very exciting, I think. I mean, they're not the only teams, but we could get a couple, you know, matchups between those teams.
And, you know, I watch enough of the Yankees. They get hot. And then when they're hot, they're like the best team in Major League Baseball. And then all of a sudden, they become one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball for a while. They are very, very inconsistent in what they do, especially out in the bullpen. So it just depends which mode they're in once the playoff starts.
The Scranton bullpen's over here waving frantically at the Yankee plane. Hi! Need help?
Take me to the playoffs with you.
We're in New York.
We're available in October.
We're literally right now in New York.
All right, Paul. Well, we appreciate you fitting us in here with the double duty with you doing this with Pat. We know you enjoy it and are good at it. So good for you. What stood out from today? I'll lead off and tell you, Ruff admitting that he misjudged what to expect from some of his players last year really stood out to me. I thought that was really stark to hear him admit, like, I just thought some guys were going to be better, and they weren't.
Yeah, and, well, a lot of things went against Lindy Ruff last year. I mean, he's trying to – it's a new team, new system, new players, and they basically take off and you have to go to Czechia. They had less than a week of training camp, and it wasn't even, well, guys are, we got to see who can make the team and who can't. It's basically, these are our guys, and we have to do it right now. So it just makes it, it made it tough on him, and he had to make some judgments on players, and he admitted it. He goes, I was wrong. I was wrong on some of the player evaluations we had, and he said, I have a much better handle now on these players than I had last year when he came in.
Ruff, by the way, 65 now, and he's fourth all-time, or he should get to fourth all-time in wins. He's fifth, 14 back of Barry Trotz, who hasn't coached in the league for a few years. Paul Maurice is above him, still going, but Lindy should get to top four probably, you know, mid-season or thereabouts. Injuries already, Paul, day one, but Luukkonen and Greenway, if that's not all of it. Let's start with Luukkonen. What do we know?
Tuck also. Tuck is minor. I don't think he'll be at practice tomorrow, but they just said it's going to be a few days. Greenway, apparently, if you remember, he had surgery last year, and he had a setback and had surgery again in July. They're hoping he'll be ready by opening day, but they're not sure. That's what they're shooting for. Luukkonen, it's the where he pushes off as a goaltender to get across the crease. Sometimes you push off at the post. That's the only time he feels any discomfort. There isn't like discomfort walking around or standing or anything like that. It's when he pushes off like that. Adams says it's already getting better. He says it's going in the right direction. So Adams described it as this. It's day-to-day. He said he doesn't think it's going to be a long-term thing. He goes, you never know. But he said they did imaging. The imaging was fine. There's no problem with the imaging at all. So they're encouraged by Luukkonen. But, you know, he did leave the door open that it could maybe get worse or maybe not, you know, get better right away. But they wanted to have themselves covered. So that's why they went out and signed Gorgiev.
Yeah.
Gorgiev.
Yeah, that is a motion, that is a movement that goalies make 1,000 times a day, right? The pushing off the practice, games. I mean, it's vital. So, like, hearing that that is what's causing him discomfort, of course the thing can heal, but, man, I'd be worried. I hope they're careful, because if he comes back too soon, that seems like a thing that could just kind of linger. So I hope they address it and address it smartly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, I look at it that it could be, but it's something that could nag him too. And that's right. The last thing he needs.
Right.
He has to be their guy. And to have something nagging at him right off the bat is just not a good sign. Even if he's had a good summer and was coming in with a lot of confidence and maybe improved his game and did some things in the off season, this is just not a good thing to start, especially as you mentioned, this type of an injury, even if it only goes on for a week or a week and a half or a week or two. It's just, you wonder if it's something that's going to nag at him all season off and on.
Yeah. I wonder, Paul, if it lingers, into camp, even just for a bit, is there a scenario where the door opens for Levi again? Not to have it given to him like has happened in the past, because we know how that turned out, but for him to earn it, like either in practices or in preseason games. Because while I'm fine with him being in Rochester, he is entering into, I mean, it's year four, but year one was like, whatever, a half a dozen games or whatever it was. But 2 and 3, seasons, he's in Rochester largely. I wouldn't mind if he won the job. Like, is there a scenario where that presents itself to you? Or do you think now that they've got Lyon and then now another veteran in Georgiev, that Levi's job is in Rochester until further notice?
I think the second one. I don't think they go out and get a goalie if they were thinking that he's close. I think the Laval series told me what I needed to know, that maybe he's not quite ready for the NHL yet. That doesn't mean he won't ever be an NHL goalie. Adams has full belief in Levi. I believe him when he says that. He says there's no question in his mind that Levi will be an NHL goaltender, and he said he's told him that. And he said, the thing is, the player, through his play, will let us know when he's ready. And that's why I think they targeted him for Rochester, because I think they saw the same thing I saw. He's not quite ready, even though he was an all-star last year. In the first series, he was fantastic. Second series was against the top team from the regular season, and it did not go well at all, except for one game. So you never say never, if and the thing is too, it's not like he's going to get game after game. I mean, he's going to get maybe one full game and a half game or two full games at the most in preseason. Is that enough to really take the job,
yeah,
so to speak? But I think the fact that they signed a goalie was all we needed to know.
Paul, what do we have this camp season for job battles, roster battles?
Well, Greenway makes it interesting. Danforth and Doan. Doan, I think a lot of people think there's an upside there. They felt last year it took them about a half year to get used to the NHL and what the NHL is all about. So they felt that the second half of the year he was much better. He's got a really good shot.
Right.
He's a very good forechecker. He'll be around that net to get those types of goals. There are some people who feel, Ray Ferraro was one of them, that there is a pretty good upside offensively to a guy like Doan. So maybe that's somebody that could all of a sudden catch people's eye and surprise a little bit. And if Greenway's not ready, I would think Doan might get that opportunity to play with Zucker and McLeod, on that mm-hmm. line, where I think Greenway right now is ticketed there. But as I look at it, Danforth might wind up on the last energy line, and they like Danforth a lot. He's an agitator. He's always in the middle of stuff too. And Doan might get that opportunity to play on a two-way line with McLeod.
All right, Paul, you're not an agitator, as I would describe you.
We're going to wrap up because I know you got to get to your game. But do you have anything to tell us about what's going on with Tuck? Not just the injury, but like the contract thing is still sort of hanging out there.
Well, the thing to remember, too, is don't forget McDavid and Eichel also could have contract extensions
sure.
signed, and they don't.
A lot of guys.
So it seems waiting. Like, yep. Yeah, it seems like these contract extensions aren't easy. Again, Adams reiterated once again that Tuck wants to be here. He said they are continuing to talk, will continue to talk this week. He said it has not been a bad negotiation. It's just, you know, they have to find some common ground between the two sides. He goes, would he love to get it done before the season? He goes, sure he would. But he goes, he's not going to put a timetable on it. And he says it gets done when both teams feel that it works for them. Both sides feel that it works for them. So I'm not real worried about it just because, as I said, McDavid, if they can't get something done with him or they can't get something done with Eichel, both, you know, especially in Eichel's case, who wants to stay in Vegas, you know, I'm not extremely worried about it. Now, if we're talking near the trade deadline, well, now you got to make a decision.
Right.
You either got to trade Tuck and get something for him, or make sure that you're going to be able to sign him. So, but there are ways away from that. So, to me, right now, it's not a concern.
Is it the rising cap? Is there maybe?
I think that's what it is. Yeah, some of what I've read, Paul, maybe you've seen similar. Yeah, I mean, the landscape is so uncertain that guys are, you know. There's a lot of talk that McDavid might just, you know, I read Pierre LeBrun today, 2, 3, 4 years even. Like, they're not going to max anymore because they're expecting the cap to change so dramatically that guys don't want to commit and get locked in when salaries are going to go through the roof. So we'll let you go, Paul. We'll continue from here.
But the thing is, with Tuck also, you know, to finish up on him, if he only goes 4 years, that takes him to 34. What kind of a deal is he going to get at 34?
Yeah.
So for Alex Tuck, I would think you're looking for 7, 8 years, wouldn't you be?
Yeah, it's different situation than those other guys, those big top-level star guys. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. All right, thanks, Paul.
No problem, guys.
There's our Paul Hamilton. His appearances are brought to you by Equitable Advisors, planning for your futures about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Sabres go back to work, though. Here's Matteo Constantini, 2-on-1, leaving it across the shot, and a goal! Buffalo getting the goal, Olivier Nadeau, as Matteo Constantini broke out with speed, and Olivier Nadeau goes to the net, gets rewarded, and the Sabres cut into the deficit. It's now 4-2.
Brayden Wilson there on the call for the Prospects Challenge. Owen, you were there, right? Prospects Challenge? And, the Sabres lost all their games in the Prospect Challenge?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Prospect Challenge, you know.
Yeah, they didn't win. They didn't win a game.
They didn't win. They play a preseason game in less than a week.
6 days. Next Monday, they'll be in Columbus. And then a week from tonight, they play Columbus at home. So you can go to the arena in 1 week and watch hockey, if you'd like.
I think I would like.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Right?
I mean, you get excited?
Preseason hockey. Hey, let's play the game. Remember Josh Norris? I mean, hey, it could be a thing, right?
What number is he wearing now?
9.
Yes.
He's wearing 9.
He switched since the last time we brought him up, I think.
That's right.
I think that was since then.
That's right. The Sabres are also taking submissions for a new goal song this year.
Yes, they are, which I know what you're going to vote for.
The only song that's ever been perfect for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just saying, as soon as they want to right this wrong, they played it in a year most recently that they did make the playoffs. And they haven't made the playoffs since. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Swords of 1,000 Men.
There was a guy with an old Eichel jersey yesterday at the Prospects Challenge with Benson taped over that, and then Benson crossed out and Norris just written on the jersey. It's pretty good.
Right.
Pretty good.
Yeah, Nines had a bunch of times. My brother had a Derek Roy jersey that the Sabre store would switch to Steve Ott when they traded for him.
I'm going back to Eric Rasmussen. Didn't he wear number 9?
Yes, he did.
I think so.
Yes, he did. And then you had Kane. Eichel. Yeah, so there's been a 9 really the whole time. It's a good number.
It is.
It is a good number.
It's a good hockey number.
Yes.
And now their most highly paid forwards wearing it.
Yeah.
So, and probably also their number 1 center going into the year.
Right. So, you know, the thing about the Swords of 1,000 Men and the goal song is, you know, you'll have people say, like, oh, it's cheesy. It's just, I would just, every once in a while, I like to bring up an idea here. Imagine introducing the Shout song today.
Oh, it'd be a disaster.
Imagine.
I would be against it.
Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
You know that song, Shout? We're going to sing that, and then we're going to say, the Bills make me want to shout.
And it's also going to be like a karaoke version.
Yes, we're all going to sing along to it.
Yeah.
you would be thrown out of the building.
I would if it
that's
was the
cheesiest the thing old, of all time. Get out of here. You're a loser.
Yeah. If it was the original Isley Brothers, like I would maybe fight for it, but not the. It's like it sounds like an 80s karaoke song, right? That they have.
I don't know.
It's not the one you would hear at a wedding.
No, that's right.
Or that you heard in like the opening of Wedding Crashers. That is not. It's not that one. So if it was that one, I maybe like I could see that. But no, not like changing the lyrics and having it be what it is now. But it's great, right? Like because it's now it's tradition. It cemented itself in tradition. And you're saying that would be Swords of a Thousand Men?
Well, if you're just someone that wants to think it's lame, it's cheesy, and make fun of, you want to make fun of it. There's an old proverb, Joe. You know what they say? Something along the lines of this. The best time to plant a tree was 30 years ago. The second best time is today. You can't grow a tradition without starting it. And Swords of a Thousand Men is, of course, the right song for the goal song for the Buffalo Sabres. And it would be amazing, and it would be great, and we'd all be singing hoorah, hoorah, and they'd make the playoffs. That's it. Make the change, make the playoffs. That's it. Come on. It's easy as that. I'll play the song probably next week or later in the week.
If they make the playoffs, they could have anything they want be the goal song, and I would be okay with it.
Ooh, that's a challenge.
The worst song imaginable.
Is there a bridge too
What's
far
New
here?
Pussycat by Tom Jones could be their goal song if they make the playoffs.
That the worst you could think of?
Yeah. Off the top of my head, that'd be a terrible goal song.
They are ditching Kickstart My Heart, which did not last long.
Which is probably good because I don't really think it's a great goal song.
No, it was
fine. It's a good arena song, beginning of a game.
Yes, it was an odd choice for a goal song. It wasn't the worst ever. It just kind of felt out of place.
Right.
But we'll see what they go for. I also like going away from individual goal songs. I know that was a really hot thing in the NHL.
Yeah.
And I don't... It's a cool idea, but I want the whole concept to be we all know what's coming and it starts to like build. They've scored a lot of goals. That's not been a problem for them. They score goals. We should have a song that we all know. This is where we say it can't be the shout song, right?
Can't be the shout song.
Can't.
No, absolutely not.
Some people do want that.
No, that's bad.
Can't be the shout
song. Can't be the shout song and it can't be Mr. Brightside.
No.
Because we're going to it's getting overplayed. That's my greatest fear. I don't want that song being overplayed. If it comes on now on the radio or if I've got a playlist on and that comes on, I'm skipping it.
You skip Mr. Brightside?
Because I'm hearing it too much. And I think it's the Bills that are doing it. They're trying to make that a tradition, right? And that's good. Like, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm just trying not to have that be overplayed. And I saw a lot of people voting for that as the goal song. I'm like, no. This is too much. One too many.
No, that's not going to work.
We're doing it too much.
803-0550 to join us if you want. Any takeaways from the prospects challenge?
Good.
Speaking on the Sabres real quick, Georgiev signed. We didn't get you on as a goalie for Alexander Georgiev.
Yeah.
I saw yesterday Elliot Friedman talking about on his 32 Thoughts podcast, suggesting that Lukanen is hurt.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got a tweak that they're just not really sure about yet.
Matthew
Fairbairn had that last week, too.
Okay.
He's got an injury. They don't know what the timeline is. They did call it a tweak.
Yeah, and but Friedman went out of his way to say they're not saying he is hurt. They're saying they don't know.
Exactly.
They don't know. They're kind of waiting. And that's where Georgiev signed, and Friedman went so far as to say, you'll notice Georgiev didn't get the NHL minimum. He got a little more,
right,
which is usually an indication that the team says, we have to get this done.
Yeah. When that signing first came through, I was confused and then thought, well, they need somebody, like they're trying to get depth for Rochester. Like they're just trying to make sure if they want to keep Levi down there that they don't need to call him up if Lyon or UPL gets hurt. And then this came out about UPL, and it's a little cloudier on what exactly Georgiev is going to do for them. I don't love it because I don't think he's an NHL-level goaltender anymore. He was great in New York when he started off and has really struggled ever since then. It's been bad for him. So I would be concerned if their plan is for him to play games in the season, especially early when they need to start off well. So the Georgiev thing is an interesting move. And then prospects challenge-wise, yesterday I called the game with Brayton and Paul. Milosh looked good. He gave up a lot of goals, but not really anything he could have done about much of any of them. It was a couple of backdoor plays and some weird bounces.
Who's this? Who looked good?
Samuel Milosh, their fifth round, I believe, pick from this season. He played the whole game yesterday. The plan was for him to split with Raslav. Raslav did not play any games in this tournament because he was sick, so we did not get to see him. But it was interesting. They were winless, like I mentioned, and the top guys didn't do a whole lot. Like Rosén, Hellenius, Wahlberg, those guys didn't look as dominant as you would hope that they would in a setting like this. It was more the depth pieces that did stuff for the Sabres.
Mertko looked good in the first game.
Looked good in the first game. He looked good yesterday when I saw him. Like, really solid, just confident, good with the puck, can really skate, and made a couple of nice hits. And it was you know, you try not to take too much out of these prospects challenge.
No, the number one way to win a prospects challenge, I think, sorry to be snarky here, is to hit people.
Yeah.
That's seriously how you win. You come away with four hits, people walk out of that building like, I'll tell you, I like that guy. He hit people.
Yeah, people still remember the name Matej Pekar, who never played a single game for the Sabres.
Right. He hit guys. Of that. He mixed it up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, they looked dangerous. The Hellenius yesterday was dominant. Looked really good. Didn't end up scoring. He had an assist. But he looked really, really good. It seemed kind of like every game there was a different sort of star of the show. And yesterday for me, that was Hellenius. Rusinski was good yesterday, too.
On Georgiev, I think he's going to play.
And that scares me.
I don't think you sign him. I like to take it from the player's perspective. Is he coming to the Buffalo Sabres if he thinks he's playing in the AHL? He wasn't good last year. He was horrible last year.
Yeah.
He's played the fifth most games in the National Hockey League in the last three seasons. And not to make like a judgment just on where the guy's from, but where do those Eastern European guys generally go when they're out of options in the NHL? They don't go be an AHL backup. They go to the KHL or they go to the Finnish League, which is where he's been before.
Yeah.
So that's where I believe he's not signing up to be Devin Levi's backup in Rochester.
The extra money indicates that too, and not that it's a lot, but it's something. And I don't think you're giving that to a guy that's going to just stick around in the AHL and help out your developing goaltender.
And listen, I'm not telling you he's been good at all in the last 3 years, but whether it's save percentage, whether it's goal saved above expected, you want to look at delta save percent, every single number, maybe not every single number, but a lot of the numbers you'll find in the last three seasons, he's better than UPL.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that they don't have a lot to do, like they don't have a lot there in terms of high level play. And so you sign a guy like this, and I think on most teams you would be like, he's going to not play for the team. But because they are where they're at in net and they don't want to force Levi into it, they're in a position where they're in the bargain bin looking for a guy that's been bad for the last couple of years.
Whatever. Throw a dart, and if Lukanen's back and he doesn't have a spot, then he'll go over to Europe.
Right.
See my tweet about the Sabres the other day, by the way, very quick?
Which one?
When they sign Alex Tuck, if it's $8.3 million or more, they'll have the most cap spent for next season in the NHL. Already committed to next season.
Yeah,
the moment they sign Tuck, they're going to be number one in the NHL in dollars already committed by next season. Which I don't know whether that makes me feel good or bad, because I guess good because, okay, they actually are spending money, but also bad because they're spending money on what?
Right. They're spending money because they've got guys locked up because they locked them up early.
It's time to pay guys.
Right, and now it's just that the toll is due. And, you know, they have the most for next year because they probably won't, you know, they're going to have to not do a lot because they're going to have less cap space than everybody else. So they're going to go in, no matter what happens this year, with less room to work with to change over the team, unless there are massive overhauls coming, which is possible. That's your way out of that. So I did see that, Joe, and I thought about that in the same way. Like, I don't know how I feel about that. You need to see how it goes this year to know how you feel about that, I think.
803-0550. Sabre season approaches.
1 week.
Here we go.
And how long until the season opener against the Rangers?
It's
October 9th.
Yeah, 9th.
So less than a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sneaks yeah, like, up on you. Go ahead and take a guess at who starts in goal their first night. It's not easy.
No, it's not, because is it Alex Lyon?
It's probably Alex Lyon.
It's going to be Lyon.
That would be, if UPL, right now, you made me bet I'd pick him.
If yeah. you, because UPL's tweaked, if he's right. in fact tweaked.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll find out more. They start training camp Wednesday. And if he's on the ice already, just and he's just kind of managing it, I would expect him to start the season.
Let's have tomorrow go better than day one of training camp last year. Remember what happened day one of training camp last year? 90 seconds in, Rasmus Dahlin got hurt.
That's right.
Yes.
Let's just have it go better than that. And it'll be a good day.
Absolutely.
I don't remember that.
He got hurt a minute in.
Yeah.
A minute into the first, I think you might have been off that day because we were on the air,
right.
And it's like, all right, Sabres are hitting the ice, and like it was the okay. consecutive tweets of they're on the ice for practice. Dahlin's hurt. Like what? Of course, right?
Yeah, that's tough. What else? I had something else on the Sabres. I forget what it was.
We'll get to the cap going up double in the next 10 years. That was another report from yesterday.
Double, huh?
It'll double in the next 10 years.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'd say that Alex has been told very clearly by myself and the organization how important he is to us. We want him here long term. The good news is that he's said the exact same thing about being here. He wants to be here. He's made it clear to me and to us. And, you know, we've had good productive conversations with the Bartletts this summer. That's his agency. And, you know, like these things take time. We're gonna work through it. But I think for me, in my experience over the years, the most important thing is you have alignment on those key principles of wanting to be here, believing in the organization, and now we'll keep working at it. So that's something that's a priority, though, for sure.
And we have some of our favorite people in the business, the Bartletts, on the line right now to discuss the ongoing negotiations. I'm kidding, but we would welcome the Bartletts anytime. They are...
Oh, they would do it no problem. Yes,
they are a tremendous family. Tremendous place in this game, representing so many over the years and currently. And your takeaway on Tuck as the negotiations continue amidst a changing landscape in the NHL. And if you missed it off the top, also part of that address from the GM today was that Alex is dealing with a little setback of his own right now and is in the kind of the day-to-day slash slightly longer than day-to-day realm here when they hit the ice tomorrow.
So what I'm thinking about Tuck is he's a huge part of this organization, not just the leadership, but the production, you know, could be a consistent 34, 35 goals a season, maybe even close to 40, 70 plus 80 points, a point a game. Like that's what I see out of Alex Tuck. Kevin Adams said they're going to have meetings this week with the Bartletts and discuss it. It's interesting to me because I just put down the names of players, UFAs and RFAs, that could sign an extension, that were, you know, open to sign an extension after July 1 this year. Mm-hmm. And there's only five guys that have signed an extension. So I think what's going on is agents, I don't want to blame the agents, but I'm saying what they're saying is that the cap is going to go way up next year and that there's going to be a bigger piece of the pie to be had. There's not as much restriction and saying, well, we only have, you know, $7.5 million of cap space. And, you know, so you can take seven, but we need to, there's more room. So they're trying to stretch it a little bit more and trying to get more money. Kaprizov with Minnesota saying he wants 16 plus, right? that he would apparently have turned down 16 a year for 8 years. Like that's a lot. So there's not been a lot of extensions being signed this year. So a player like Tuck, I look at my list, McDavid, Panarin, Eiko, Bobrovsky, Kaprizov, Kyle Connor, Marty Natchez, Adrian Kempe, Kopitar, Schmaltz, Jason Robertson, Connor Bedard. Like, there's a lot of guys that are due for an extension that haven't done it. So I think it will get done. I think it will get done, if not before the season, before the month of November. And I think that is going to be a great thing for the organization, but I'm not worried. I don't have a sense of I'm worried about it right now, Duffer. So I'm going to stay positive on it, but I think he's a huge part of the team moving forward.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Schmaltz, because that's the name of one of the albums of Spanish Love Songs, who I saw in concert in Rochester last night. And a highlight track of that album is Buffalo, Buffalo, which they played last night as well. So I'm a very happy individual today, because they're one of my favorite bands. Oh. I brought one of my favorite people with me, in our beloved Jason Weiss.
Oh, Weissy went.
So,
yeah.
That was a nice night in the ROC.
So. He's recovered from his Sunday night at the Borderlands, so I'm glad that that worked out. But no, so I think of now, talk is day-to-day, should be fine. Jordan Greenway, that was a bit of an unexpected news today when Kevin Adams said that Greenway had to have surgery in mid-July, that he won't be ready for the start of camp, and they're going to see. We all know that Jordan Greenway.
Second surgery,
you're right. So yes. that's a great point. Like, that's a second surgery. So, look, Jordan Greenway is a big man. Jordan Greenway has dealt with a lot of injuries, and now you go from one surgery to another to try to, you know, keep you healthy. That maybe is where the unknown is coming in, which would be, you know, Tyson Kosak, and where does the young players of Rochester may be fitting in and being given opportunity. Look, Jordan Greenway was not going to be a top six guy, but he was going to have an important role, because Lindy Ruff has leaned on Greenway for big moments like penalty kill and some defensive responsibility, some physical responsibility. So if he's not there, there's an opening in that spot for somebody to fill in those minutes and those responsibilities. And I don't know. I'm very positive on Tuck and his contract. I'm hesitant to think that Greenway will be there game one of the season.
Right. And without him on the left side, I think you have to consider somebody playing their off wing, which is maybe it's as... I don't want to say irrelevant, but in quotations, much ado about nothing, kind of like lefty, righty, because that's always like situational. And so many people just like don't pay too much attention to it. And I think with forwards, I think we've always for years seen the versatility and comfort of some of the game's best scorers, let alone just,
and they're off wing
players. I mean, I think we could easily see a Jack Quinn or Josh Doan, find themselves on the left side. But I also think that even without Greenway's injury, I think the left side was already presenting us with an awful lot of questions based on, are they going to start the year with Zach Benson on the number one line? And of course his name came up, and there was a very honest answer with, you know, almost underlying metrics on what Benson did playing with top line players, but more specifically what he didn't accomplish, which is kind of finishing on those offensive chances. And again, totally understandable. Second year, 19 years old, whatever. But what are the better options? Like, if you don't start with Benson there, is Zucker a top line guy? Does Doan have an unbelievable camp and earn himself, you know, based on like what he's in a very, very, very small sample size, what his makeup is to be good on the defensive side. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's always nice to have a defensive conscience with two of
playing
your
top offensive
players.
Playing against top lines, going to be at a team.
You know
yes.
what I mean? And or based on the belief that we heard from Kevin Adams in Jack Quinn, does Quinn make that diagonal line across from like third line right wing to first line left wing?
Well, not only that, all of a sudden you could say Tage is a center, Yuri Kulik is a left wing, and
that
Quinn's
I got
a right
no
wing.
Indication of.
No indication of, but you're going to try different trios, different pairings, different everything. So maybe if you don't like a righty on the left wing because you're like, hey, can't get the puck off the wall in the defensive zone, always has to be on their backhand to try to get it out. It's a hard to make a second pass to get going in transition. Well, maybe you're going to have to move things around. Just like you could move Peyton Krebs to the left wing and put Tyson Kozak in the middle and keep Dan Fort on the right side or whatnot. Then you have lefty-righty and you're going better in that way. I think this Benson, the left side of the Ford group, as you made it, as you specified, is going to be where we will see more movement. We will see players moving up and down in preseason, trying with different lines and different responsibility. Mm-hmm. I don't think Jason Zucker is a top line left winger, but if you don't have a better option and nothing is clicking up there, that may be your go-to for the start of the season, waiting to see what comes out with the rest of the guys and who will take that job away from him. Mm-hmm. So I'm not taking anything off the table here when it comes to who's going to play that left side 1-2-3-4. It could be anything right now.
Mm-hmm. Meaning names we haven't discussed yet?
Well, my first thought was, okay, who in Rochester?
Anton Wahlberg. But he's not replacing Zach Benson on the top line.
No, he's not.
You know what I mean? Like, if Wahlberg has the best camp of his life, I have a tough time today imagining that he could rocket that far up the depth chart to start the season.
But could you see, and I don't know that I would play this guy with Kulik and maybe Thompson because I feel like that would be a lot of young, but could you see an Oslin playing the left side on the top line or Roseanne being there, like depending on how camp, I think those two have a better chance maybe than Wahlberg with a good camp to say, hey, it fits better there. But yeah. What if you moved Zucker up and then Norris and Tuck with their experience and their maturity can take on a younger player to say, hey, come on our line as a left wing.
Right. See, when you have discussions like this, I then get more excited about the 6 preseason games.
Yeah.
But everybody likes to talk us down. Talk everyone
down.
Your
excitement level went from 1 to 3 on a scale of 10 5 to 8?
You're questioning my sincerity when it comes to my passion for games, period. Oh.
Let's just say it may have jumped from a 4 to a 7 for me.
Okay. 7 so on a scale of what?
That's good. On a scale of what? 1 through 100. but I have a hard time. I love Zach Benson. I think that from the first time he stepped on the ice at development camp after getting drafted, I saw a little pit bull in him, a little, guy that will get under your skin, that will win one-on-one battles, that will get stronger. I don't see the finish. I don't think he's that shiny, diamond in the window in the Swiss, street. And you're like, man, that is shining. But I think he has some great value of a little bit more of a tough and rumble type of player that will come in. Just have a hard time seeing him on the top line.
Because of the Greenway injury or like?
No, just have a hard time seeing Benson being a guy that you
I know, but we saw him there at the end of last year. So, like, before we're having today's discussion, who were you thinking was going to be there?
I'm thinking,
like, the only reason I thought we were talking about it today is because of Greenway's injury. But
I think it may be by default that it is a Benson that's out there. But I just when this team is a playoff team and a contender, I feel like that is not Zach Benson, top line left winger team. Maybe it is second line left winger. Maybe it's a middle six left winger that produces 55, 50 points a year. But a top line left winger, I'd like to say that's 75 points in the year. And I don't see 70 points.
Yeah.
I
mean,
after I see your, I need a sound effect. I need to press a button when you're like, not sure.
I don't think you need that when you're going to get the expected production when fully healthy from Norris, who is fully healthy, and Thompson. Like, I'm perfectly okay with Norris being a 70-point guy, Thompson being an 80-point guy, and whoever's on the left being a 50-point guy. I really am.
As long as you don't give up 275 goals, because then you need 95 points and 85 points and 75 points for that line to overcome that.
There are many more current examples, but allow me to just throw out, you know, one that's far too old to even bring up. But just I get it. It was not, it was center as opposed to left wing. But just remember how well Steve Ruchin complimented Solani and Correa. You know, like, you don't have to have three superstars all 80 to 90 points. You don't.
I mean, we can go Pascal Dupuis and whatever, like playing top line with Sidney Crosby, but you're playing with Sidney Crosby. So it's like, you don't need 85, 75 points. You just need to know how to play with those guys. Mm-hmm. And until I see Benson doing it consistently, that he is in the right place and the line is rolling and they have puck possession and his role is more defined on that top line or top six, I'm still going to have a question mark.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.